I don't know what's real. I don't know what's not real.
Limited Capacity is a collection of six darkly amusing stories about the mysterious ways we interact with the internet and with each other.
There's something going on with him. It's like an act. I don't trust him.
What?
You're staring at me like I should say something, but I don't really know what to do here.
That's the whole name of the game. Don't talk about how the town isn't real. Do you understand?
Limited Capacity. Available now on CBC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
We're back for another one. Cannot wait to allow you into the space to listen to this week's Sick Boy episode. We had the absolute pleasure of sitting down with our new friend Libby, all the way from Utah. And Libby is living with what's called CRPS, C-R-P-S. And no, that is not a gang. It is CRPS, C-R-P-S stands for Complex Regional Pain Syndrome, which is a brutal, rare nerve disease. In spite of the fact that Libby is living with this awful condition, she is just living her best life. And we had so much fun talking with Libby. She's a longtime Sick Boy fan, which we always love, having a chance to speak with longtime listeners because, you know, they're game to go wherever we go. Shout out, Libby. Thank you for rolling with the punches with all of the Mormon jokes we threw your way. And stick around for the end of the episode for the wrap-up today. Taylor, Brian, and myself talk about a fascinating story about a set of conjoined twins who recently have made headlines based on a recent celebration that they had. So hope you enjoy this, and thanks for tuning in. And of course, every episode is over on YouTube going forward. So if you want to watch the fun, head on over to YouTube and become a subscriber there. We'd love to see you. All right. Enjoy our conversation with our new friend, Libby. All right. Well, this is going to be a treat because... you know, I mean, it's always fun to record with someone and not have any idea if they even know what the fuck they're in for. But this is so lovely because we're with Libby today, who has been a longtime listener of the show. And so, first of all, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being a longtime listener. And secondly, thanks for applying to be on the show, Libby. I'm excited. I mean, I'm sorry that you had to apply to be on the show. It's kind of like a
it's like a thing now.
Yeah, it's like a bittersweet thing.
You guys are busy all the time.
Yeah. Well, I meant for you, it's bittersweet because in order to apply to be on the show,
you're sick.
You're typically struggling with something. So, Libby, I mean, before we get into it, I know you're a graphic designer and I know that you are a mother, soon to be mother of more than just one singular beautiful human. But tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Mom of one right now, soon to be two. And I started listening to your show way back after my first was born and thought like they need a sister show called Sick Girl. But like mine wasn't a chronic thing. And like, I just have had weird shit my whole life. And then, right before I had my first baby, about a year and a half before I had her, I got diagnosed with something called complex regional pain syndrome. And that's initially what got me listening to the show. Like I was looking for other like information on chronic health things and found you guys. And, so I've just had weird chronic health problems my whole life. Yeah. And that's who I am actually. So
complex regional pain syndrome.
I've never heard of that.
That sounds
it's
to me,
rare.
It comes off as like a way of the medical world kind of, assigning words to a bunch of question marks. That's what I'm saying.
That's totally what it is.
And it's cool because it's the acronym is like you'd craps. Say CRPS, CRAPS, CRAPS.
Yeah. I was actually just going to say when you read it, like CRPS, it does look like a sort of like a gang
yeah.
name.
It's yeah, like, it does. Yeah, that's Crips, what I was thinking.
The Crips. Yeah.
None of us have the energy to be in a gang.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The Crips tired, tired sister gang.
Yes.
It's the colors aren't red. It's like a it's a real dull kind of
Crips. Crips are blue.
It's gray.
Dog.
Yeah.
It's like a blue.
Right, right. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Crips yeah. are blue. Yeah, it's bloods like, are red.
Get it
right.
A muted, very muted color.
Mm-hmm. So complex regional pain syndrome, which is a rare nerve disease. I'm sure we'll get into it, but just to come back to the experience of like getting CURPS and and looking for places to like, you know, I guess like find solace in this new diagnosis and stumbling across Sick Boy. You know, a lot of times when we've had people with like chronic pain type issues, one of the things that I feel like we've heard a lot is how there doesn't seem to be a whole lot out there to, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of whether it's support or in terms of like hearing other people's lived experiences or even sort of education. So like 6 years ago or 7 years ago when this happened to you and you did stumble across Sick Boy, thank God for SEO, what was like, you know, what did you find out there and what are the sorts of things that you were able to find or was there quite a lack thereof for
there
resources?
There was a lack. There is still a pretty big lack, especially concerning this disease, like chronic pain in general. That's kind of what I found is like, I just needed to connect with other people with chronic pain. There's a few like Facebook groups and things for CRPS, but everybody's experience is so different because it is rare and there's not a lot of understanding that you get a lot of people who are like, oh no, my doctor said this and this and this about the disease. And other people are like, no, this was my lived experience about the disease. And so the community is kind of at odds with each other sometimes. Mm. So really the community that I had to find was just general chronic pain.
Taylor was mentioning, like Taylor pointed out the fact that it's chronic regional pain syndrome, which sounds like it's sort of focused in an area. And I'm guessing that like maybe other people with chronic regional pain maybe have it in different regions. What does that look like?
It's kind of this, so it used to be called something called reflex sympathetic dystrophy. So it's already gone through a renaming system. And then this rename is kind of like, it's like a rebrand, but it's still a little bit misleading. You usually have it in a limb and most people, I think, the internet says things like, oh, it's in a hand or a wrist. But a lot of people I've come across are like me. Mine started in my foot. I fell down some stairs.
Oh, no.
And broke my foot and ankle. And that's usually how it starts, is some sort of traumatic injury. They've kind of put it into two categories of CRPS-1 and CRPS-2. And one is kind of like, we don't see the trauma. Like, we don't have like a known trauma source, like an injury like I do. So some people don't have that initial instigating factor, but most of us do. And it starts with that injury and then your nervous system just can't respond properly. You just have extreme levels of pain, more than you would imagine for the type of injury you get. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't get better.
So,
and that
so
was my experience basically.
And when you fell down the stairs, was the pain sort of isolated to the foot and ankle and leg after that happened?
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing about it, is like, that's why they kind of call it like this regional pain syndrome, right? It's in this certain nerve group center. But as time goes on, and this is where things like odds of the community happen, a lot of people experience spread of the disease. And some doctors will tell you that's not possible. And some doctors will be like, oh yeah, it's totally normal. It can spread to organs. It can move full body. So
yeah,
it's kind of been really rough to like narrow down what happens to people and like get diagnoses for people. I was really lucky. I had a great orthopedic surgeon who was like, this is weird. This is totally not a normal foot break. Something else is going on. At first he thought that I might have bone cancer. We did some MRIs and things and couldn't find anything. And he was like, you've got to go see a specialist, said the specialist. It's a joke in our house because that's my whole life. Ooh. Every specialist is like, I think you need to go see a specialist.
You need someone more special.
Exactly.
Or different. The specialist.
That's what the neurologist did when they sent me to the cardiologist. So
yeah, it's I'm on a page right now called caringmedical.com. And actually, like, to be honest, if there's anybody out there who has complex regional pain syndrome or suspects that they might, this seems like a insanely in-depth, deep dive. And I mean, I'm talking like I'm scrolling forever here and it's full of information. But one of the parts that I find really interesting here is that there's three stages of CURPS. So it's a deteriorating disease that progresses in three different stages. So kind of what you were kind of touching on there. So stage one is the acute phase. In the acute phase, pain is described as burning or aching and is often aggravated by touch, emotional upset, or active/passive movements. The pain of simple injuries is much worse and lasts far longer than it should. Stage two is the dystrophic phase. In the dystrophic phase, pain is constant. The pain is exacerbated by simple movement or sensations such as touching, vibrating, or even blowing on the limb.
Who's blowing on limbs?
All sounds very sexual.
I feel like we've had some interesting conversations with people over the years with chronic pain.
Yes,
who will be like the breeze.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So it doesn't have to be blowing. It's just like, or like the sheets at night, or like my husband's foot will like graze mine in bed and I'll be like, ah.
That's so interesting. Cause I've had this conversation with my wife and I mean, like, I'm talking like, I'm relating to this experience in like a 0.001% way.
So really, like, just trying to really rub it into your face and make you feel shitty.
But what I mean, take away
all of your experience.
He has and so make much it pain.
His. Yes, that's
but
right.
What I mean, like these really, like these odd moments where I'll go, there's a patch of my skin that for some reason is like just uncomfortable. It's just, and it's like I can feel like the fabric of my pants touching it is uncomfortable, and it's extremely mild.
But there's no rash.
It makes you hyper aware of everything that's happening in your body.
Right. Yeah, there's no rash or anything. There's no reason. I can't see anything. I didn't do anything to
just
it.
Just you saying that makes me feel that way right now.
And then Kyle will be like, "Yeah, I get that sometimes." And then I'm like, "Huh, I wonder what that is." And I'll have it for like a few hours, and it goes away. Right. But like I'm always so like, what the fuck is happening?
It's probably stage zero CURPS.
Stage
it's coming
zero,
for you.
That's right.
Pre-CURPS.
In stage two, they go on to say, this is kind of interesting, the affected limb becomes even more fluid-filled, as well as cool and hyperhidrosis, sweaty. there's a decreased uptake of red blood cells, and bone scans reveal the initial stages of osteoporosis.
Which I was actually diagnosed with prior to getting diagnosed with complex regional pain syndrome for a separate issue. Okay. So it's been real fun.
Just really antsy to get that that brittle bone disease.
I just don't like my bones.
Yeah. Libby, like hearing the first two stages so far, like are you just like, yes, all of those
super
things.
Super accurate, yeah.
Okay, now let's go into stage three.
I don't wanna.
Stage three is the atrophic stage. Yep. In the atrophic stage, irreversible damage to the extremity has occurred. The limb contracts because of limited movement. Skin becomes cool, thin, and shiny. Scar tissue has formed, and because of this, it's difficult to move the joint at all. Osteoporosis and arthritis run rampant through the joint. This leads to a permanently frozen limb. You basically become a corpse in the limb.
Libby, I'm interested.
I'm not stage three yet.
Okay. I'm like living in stage two and having some borderline symptoms of some of the things in stage three. Like I've had the cooling, like I just saw a doctor who won't see me and treat me because I'm pregnant. But she like wanted, you always get this like imposter syndrome. Like every new doctor wants to verify you have this. Cause nobody really, it's such a rare thing. And so they like go through this Budapest criteria basically to like make sure you meet all these things to diagnose you. And she did that. And she was like, checking everything. And she was like, oh, you're already having like my left leg is like 2 or 3 degrees cooler than my right leg. it's weird shit.
Oh, it's actually a temperature thing.
Yeah.
So what sounds interesting to me about this is that like when somebody says that they have chronic pain, like we've talked with many people with chronic pain, and it's usually like a very I don't know how to describe it, or the person can describe it, but there's very little like criteria that like a doctor is looking for or has at their disposal to try and yeah. say that you have a diagnosis of this thing. Whereas with this, it sounds like there's a,
yeah.
excuse me, quite a laundry list of things that a doctor could look for to assess, to confirm whether you have it or not.
And a lot of doctors will, and they kind of live off of it, but I think some of it is a little vague still, because you have to meet, I do think it's called the Budapest criteria. It's probably on that page or on somewhere. Mm-hmm. You have to meet a few different things. Like when I first had it, my foot was like purpley. Like, so you have some color change, you have like, some hair loss, you have on the limb, like, I don't even have to shave that leg. Like,
whoa, actually
nothing's happening there. Yeah. So, and then there's like a few other things, like you have to be able to have that like dystrophy where the touch is like intense. So there's like three different areas and you have to meet like one or two things in each area, which I mean, is kind of unusual, but that's kind of how they live by it. Otherwise they're just kind of like, we don't know, you have chronic pain, like you broke your foot. It's just, it hurts, whatever. And a lot of people don't see all those criteria. And I think sometimes it gets missed. I think it's probably as rare as it is, I think it's probably underdiagnosed in a fair amount of people. Because in my experience, I didn't have all of those criteria at the same time.
Okay. Interesting.
And so at first, when I first went into the pain management doctor that the ortho sent me to, he was kind of like, I don't know. I mean, from the door, like I met with his PA and he came in because the PA was like, you got to look at this. And he like was standing in the doorway and he was like, it looks like CRPS, but you're missing a couple of things. And my foot hadn't healed from the break and it had been about 6 months. And so they sent me to a podiatrist to have reconstructive surgery.
Wow. Okay. So, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, you're going to say, I was just going to say, and that's after surgery when symptoms didn't go away. And they kind of got worse is when they were like, yeah, this is definitely CRPS. They did a couple of diagnostic test things, which isn't really by the medical books. It's just something like as a doctor, his lived experience was, they did a sympathetic nerve block in my back and saw some reaction. And he was like, yeah, let's start treating you for this.
Interesting.
Whoa. Is that a hallmark of CRPS to not heal from like if you have that initial like traumatic injury to not heal properly from it?
So I didn't know that at the time, and then I ended up with a different pain management doctor when I was pregnant with my first, and she told me that is she actually said we find that people, even before they have it and are diagnosed with it, their bodies in general just take a really long time to heal.
Yeah
which has like been my lived experience my whole life. I mean, every time something came up, it would be like, oh, you broke this or this happened, and the typical heal time is, 12 weeks or something. And mine was 24.
Right. Yeah. It's like, there's like the ground zero, right. Mm-hmm. Of the traumatic incident that it occurred. So in your case, the foot, the ankle, and then that never really comes around to healing. And then any other kind of injuries or whatever happens to the rest of your body, it almost is like directly affected by the fact that is the thing that spurred this thing. And so maybe you bang your elbow and your elbow's fucked up for what should be 2 weeks ends up being 9 months. And maybe that eventually does get better, but the ankle's still fucked and will continue to be fucked. At least that's what I've been kind of taking from.
It's interesting because it sounds like we've heard a lot about pain being thought of as a symptom when really pain should be thought of as a diagnosis, like the actual problem.
I just listened to your chronic pain expert episode and I loved her. And I was like, can I please meet with you and talk about my disease?
Yeah. I'm curious how you feel about that from the perspective of like, you have this diagnosis of CRPS. So in a sense it is a diagnosis, but like to the point that Taylor brought up again earlier, like it's sort of this like we know that this thing is happening, but we don't really know why. So it's just this general diagnosis.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, kind of is. And like I said, when I listened to your chronic pain expert episode, it felt really dead on in the sense that like pain is your symptom, but in reality, like when you deep dive into everything you can find on CRPS, which you do when you first get a diagnosis with something like that, right? You see a lot of things where you're like, oh my gosh, the pain isn't like the symptom. It is pain. It's affecting my nervous system. And right now, like that early stage is like, it's in the limb, but it's like moving through your whole nervous system and it ends up in your brain and it is in your brain.
Yeah.
And it's the thing. So your nervous system is the problem, which is run by your brain. Right. Yeah, so it's not just the symptom, that it is the disease.
Yeah. So for folks that are interested, that episode was actually quite recent. It was with Dr. Afton Hassett. And if you're curious to check that episode out, it was released on the 27th of December of 2023, Chronic Pain Reset, Redefining Life Beyond the Threshold. And the link to that episode will be in the show notes. I want to get into like how this has kind of had an effect on your personal life. But before I do, do you guys want to hear a bit about the Eastern Bloc criteria, the Budapest criteria for diagnosing someone?
Yeah. Like, is there a population of 1.8 million or something like that?
Yeah.
So it's basically are diagnosed
to be the city Budapest.
You're diagnosed with CRPS based on this checklist of symptoms. And this is what they say. So continuing pain, which is disproportionate to any inciting event. So you have more pain than the initial injury should be causing. Must report at, and this is under this continuing pain, must report at least one symptom in all four of the following categories: sensory, reports of hyperesthesia, excessive pain sensitivity, especially of the skin, and or allodynia.
Allodynia.
What is that? Allodynia.
A dinosaur.
That is, good, I think that's still the sensitivity. Like that's still right. Your, like.
Got it. Okay.
Hang on. I'm trying to. It's painful stimulus. Okay. So anything that doesn't normally provoke pain.
I thought. Okay. So for everybody who's just listening, which you can be watching this episode on YouTube, just a reminder, and I'm sure you're tired of hearing us say that over the last few weeks, but I thought you were.
You thought I froze?
No. So what you were doing was you were Googling, but I thought you were like digging into your arm or something to like be like, you were trying to find the answer in the feeling. And I was like, oh, interesting.
Huh.
What is it?
So returning to the criteria, the patient must display at least one sign at the time of evaluation in two or more of the following categories: vasomotor, so reports of temperature asymmetry. Or skin color changes, pseudomotor or edema, reports of edema and or sweating changes, or even sweating asymmetry. That's very interesting. Like just sweating on your left armpit, not your right.
Whoa. I get every time I have poutine, specifically poutine from Willy's.
Again,
I just get, one
side. Taylor knows.
I get
what you're going through.
I get a patch of skin underneath my left eye.
That's called an allergic reaction, yeah, brother.
That starts to sweat.
Be very careful. If you get injured, I think things are over for you.
That's an allergy to chicken broth.
I think it's stuff. I think it's stuffing poutine in particular.
Motor/trophic. So reports of decreased range of motion. Then you must display at least one sign at the same time of evaluation in two or more of the next following categories. So sensory, evidence of hyperalgesia, so to a pinprick, or
I was going to say that's the allodynia. It's still that sensitivity.
Got it. Vasomotor, evidence of temperature asymmetry, edema again, motor and trophic again. That's pretty much all I have here, but interesting stuff. So again, This site, Caring Medical, I looked this up in the middle of our conversation, so don't hold me to this if this is like at the end you find out that they're also backed by like the Proud Boys, but I'll leave the link in the show notes if anybody's interested, because it's a lot of info.
The Proud Boys are notorious. they're notorious backers.
They're really cool.
medical.org site.
It's like a really cool background to the whole site. It's just a bunch of tiki torches. Very cool.
No wonder I've not seen it before.
So, like, you know, you're a mother, you have children.
Are you allowed to have children when you have CRPS?
Allowed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the gang activity that they're a bit worried about.
That's the funny thing about it is, so I fell down the stairs in like January of 2016. And we had this whole like physical therapy in the boot, out of the boot, in the boot, out of the boot, another break. Why, how did you get another break for being out of the boot for a day? Like, which was the osteoporosis. And so I had a really amazing, I've been really lucky, internist who sent me to an endocrinologist and they started looking into things all while we're still trying to figure out what the CRPS is. So I'm like dealing with a whole second set of health issues. And she's the one that was like, you have osteoporosis. I was like 34 or something. she was like, you should not have kids. And my husband and I were kind of like, well, we kind of figured your health isn't great. Maybe being a mom isn't the thing for you, which is a big deal when you live in Utah and everyone has 42 children. So
Utah is so interesting.
Oh, it is. So we were kind of like, all right, well, that's where life is taking us. It's fine. and my husband was kind of already used to dealing with all of my many health things. I had a hole in my heart and had to have a piece of metal placed in it and had like had a lot of passing out issues and stuff. So like just from beginning of marriage to up till now, he was really like used to it. So it hadn't really affected it in that way at that time because he was already used to my health issues. But we're still kind of researching the other end of stuff. And they were like, don't have kids. And we had surgery for the CRPS and the recovery was really rough. Cause you can't like, well, it was the foot and ankle repair technically. Couldn't put weight on it for like 12 weeks, but because I'm the slow healer, it was even longer than that. And, recovering from that. And then finally going, yeah, this is CRPS. For the first little while I had sympathetic nerve blocks almost once a week for almost 5 months, which I think really slowed down the progression of my disease. I'm really lucky compared to a lot of other people. They have to wait really long for a diagnosis. And the sooner you treat it, the better off you seem to be. And so then we hit a point where they were like, the nerve blocks aren't doing enough. We want to try something called a DRG, which is a spinal cord stimulator. And we scheduled the trial for the surgery where they basically put like this TENS unit in your body to like stimulate your nerves on a regular basis.
Whoa, Dr. Hose.
And stop this pain. That's a Halifax inside joke. I'm sorry,
okay.
Everybody.
That's okay. And so this was like a new one on the market. My doctor was super excited about it. And I was kind of feeling off and a little iffy, but I was like, well, it's kind of the last option. And that's a lot where a lot of people end up is like, you either just learn to live with it or you get the spinal cord stimulator. And there's a whole bag of crap with that when you get that too. But we scheduled the surgery and something happened personally with my doctor and they had to reschedule and they called back to reschedule. And I was like doing period math in my head because no one wants to have a like massive surgery when they're on their period. And I realized I had missed my period. And I was pregnant.
Oh my God. Oh shit.
Wow.
Yeah. Period, period math for the win.
The scene in Knocked Up when they're in the editing room and they're editing footage and then she just takes a garbage bag and pukes into the garbage and the guy's on the phone next to her and someone they're like, what does she look like? And she's like, she looks like she's just realizing she's pregnant.
That's a real thing. Yeah, that was like my face on the phone when the nurse like had called me back to reschedule and I was like,
whoa, what the fuck?
Oh, shoot. I got to call you back.
Okay, I just have to say this again. Go to YouTube and watch this. I don't know what just happened. Did you see what happened there?
I don't know what happened either. I thought it was you guys.
Do a thumbs up again.
What? Yeah, did you?
Was that me?
I feel like you did a thumbs up in it. Just
this is derailing the conversation, I have to say it. I feel like someone's fucking hacked our computer. As you said that, you made this you had this epiphany. The moment those words were coming out of your mouth, there was a speech bubble.
I legit thought it was you guys.
No, I don't know what the fuck that was.
Perfect time to enter this.
There was a thought bubble that came up over your head in like animation, and it looked very quality.
What was that?
And it was an animation of a thought bubble of a thumbs up emoji, as though you just like had this epiphany.
That was actually fucked up. I'm trying.
It's the deep state. It's the deep state.
Just try it. Everybody just... You have to look more thoughtful when you do the thumbs up.
Have we said thumbs up? Thumbs up.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
It's not that. Yeah.
No, that's a... Yeah, Alexa, put on the thumbs up.
Maybe you have to do the Apple Vision Pro thing.
Think of your favorite one-hit wonder.
Or that overpriced toy your parents would never let you have.
Or that TV show that no one else remembers because it was canceled way too soon. Now what if we could fix it? I'm Francesca Ramsey.
And I'm DeLon Grant. And after 20 years of friendship, we are now hosting a new nostalgia podcast called Let Me Fix It.
Each episode, we'll dig into our favorite celebrities, shows, and brands of yesteryear, and then imagine what it would take to repackage them for relevance today.
Think of our show as an intervention, but with way less stakes.
So subscribe to Let Me Fix It wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
I wanted to ask, but we got a little bit derailed. I was curious about getting like having, you know, you mentioned this TENS unit being put inside your whatever. I was just wondering, are you allowed to use technology in Utah?
Oh,
wow.
We're not Amish.
Wow.
Yeah, dude, you're confused.
Does it take a while to get out of state for that treatment when you're riding your horse and buggy?
Oh my goodness.
It takes a really long time.
For those of you who are just listening, she is wearing a very frumpy dress with a weird bonnet. Okay. Let's re holy fuck. This, guys, so much fun. This is so silly. Okay, let's rein it back in because I do have a serious question.
Okay.
And so again, I was mentioning you have a child, you have another child on the way, and we actually just recently released an episode with a woman named Rhonda, who is dealing with chronic pain as well, and she's also a mother, and I know that, you know, even like when Tay brings Zaya into the studio, like children are a handful, and and children are, you know, they look to you not only as the person to keep them alive and feed them and take care of them, but they also look to you as like the person to stimulate them and teach them and play with them. And chronic pain is one of those things
really hard.
If anybody's ever experienced any sort of pain that's not chronic, like you throw your back out and you're out for a week or two, it's like you don't have the ability to fucking do anything, let alone like be there to offer stimuli and fun and play to your child. So how has your experience with chronic pain and CRPS kind of had an effect on the way that you feel you are able to be a mother?
When we found out we were pregnant, that was like the scariest thing for me, because I was like, shit, I can't do this. Like, how do you be a mom when you have days where you can't get out of bed and where you have days where your ankle goes out and you're falling down? And I mean, how do you be pregnant doing that, let alone actually having a human? It was, especially in the beginning, it was really hard. I had an amazing partner. My husband's incredible, and he had to do a lot, which I think was an interesting dynamic, again, living in Utah, where the dad had to be like the guy and, you know, really had to step up. I had to have an extended epidural after we had her. I ended up having to have a C-section. and so I had an epidural in for 5 days, so I couldn't even get out of the hospital bed. So he was there the whole time. He did all of the first diaper. Like, I couldn't do anything except for try and feed her, which surprisingly found out that when you have chronic pain issues, sometimes things like breastfeeding don't work great because your nervous system is messed up. So that was like a whole thing I had to deal with emotionally too, right? Because everybody puts so much pressure on women to breastfeed, and some of us can't. And so you feel like a failure. So like right from the get-go, it was really hard to be a mom because you just immediately feel like a total failure. You can't take care of your kid the way your body is designed to. Everybody's telling you to do it a certain way, and you just cannot because your body doesn't work like a normal person. Like I said, my partner was amazing, and they now have the sweetest bond, I think, because of that. She loves her daddy so much. As time went on, you kind of learn to cope with, you know, whatever hacks you can. You play stupid games like mommy, you know, is sleeping and She wants to play. So you come up with something like,
the
oh,
quiet game.
The quiet game.
Yeah.
Or hide and seek, but you just yell and mom guesses where you're at. Instead of like physically comes and finds you.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
So you make things work. And I have, you know, better days than others sometimes. And sometimes she just knows like, this is not a good day for mom. And it's kind of sad that she has to deal with that and learn to kind of live a different life than some of like her friends or what she might have had. But also I think it's giving her a lot more awareness and empathy as a kid than other kids might have typically. So she's very aware of people's emotions and feelings, and she can see easily when someone's in distress, which you don't necessarily want a five-year-old to do, but she is still five. I mean, she still gets over it pretty easy.
How do you think about like having the conversation with her as she ages about like, you know, the sort of, I guess, boundaries that you have in the sense of like, you know, when you're laying in bed and can't get up to play with her, what does that look like when you start to talk to her about those things as she develops some level of like comprehension?
She already kind of has, she knows things like we'll say, you know, you can't sit on mommy's left leg right now. Mommy's having a rough day. And she's like, oh yeah, mommy has a bad leg, or mommy gets sick more than most mommies. Like she kind of, we just immediately started talking to her that way so that she is already pretty aware of mommy's not built like Aunt Nikki. Mommy's not built like so-and-so's mom. She can't do that right now.
Mm-hmm. Was that really tough at some point when she was like really young? Like I have a 2-year-old daughter and a wife who's like about to pop pregnancy, and like Zaya, trying to get Zaya to not interact with Kyla physically in the way that wants to is hard.
Yeah. Even at five right now, like she's like, I want to sit on your lap. I want to jump towards you. And it's like, listen, mommy's barely walking right now. Like, you cannot be jumping at me.
Yeah.
And it's hard because, you know, they're little, whether they're 2 or 5 or whatever, they're still kids and they can't always quite get it. And their emotions and their excitement about something take over. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard. But again, it's like that team player thing. Like my husband's really good at being like, okay, come over here. Come talk to daddy. Come cuddle me. Come. And mommy needs a break. And because I think we have just automatically talked to her about it regularly since she was little, it's really natural for her. And so it doesn't necessarily feel like we're shutting down, you know, some sort of mommy connection time. She just knows, all right, I need to try and be calm. And if I can't, then I need to choose to do something without mommy.
It's interesting, like the language, like just the way in which the language that you use is like so important to connote that. Like we're looking into, like we've looked into a lot of like, of, you know, this, there's another baby coming. So like, how do you set up, how do you use language to describe to a 2-year-old that there is this thing that's taking away mom's capacity to do all the things that you want to do, and like and language around like, instead of like blaming, quote unquote, blaming the baby for the reason for that, like saying things in a different way.
I love the way that you said the other day to Zaya, you were like, mommy is 3 centimeters dilated.
Yeah.
And
dilated
requires you to mind your own space right now.
Right,
I thought that was really brilliant.
Boundaries. Do you understand? Boundaries.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
Yeah, she got it.
It's very, it's not about them, right? Mommy has her own boundaries. Like,
Do you find it difficult when, you know, like, I love your hacks, like the like playing hide and seek from the laying down position. That's awesome. Is it difficult sometimes when your husband is like tending to the fields or milking the goats or things like that?
God damn it, Ryan. Fuck.
Libya, I have a
bootlegging liquor across.
You need to come out and visit Utah. Lines.
I've been to Utah. I've been to Utah. It's wonderful country.
It's beautiful.
Wonderful,
we
beautiful
great
country.
Ski areas. Yeah.
Great
God,
ski
God's
areas.
Country, some might say.
That's right.
A lot of us.
Yeah. Yeah. Joseph Smith country.
He never made it here.
That's right. I knew that. I'm curious about this is like slightly it's on topic, but maybe slightly off topic, and maybe you've never heard of this or made this connection, but I'm curious about how CRPS affects your nervous system, and mm-hmm. and I was thinking about it before, but then you mentioned breastfeeding and producing milk and how the nervous system interfere with that. And so over the past like few years, I've been like really, I've been really interested in just like, I'm an athlete, and I'm thinking about like optimizing health and all that sort of thing and exercise. And I've come to learn that like what stress is in a fairly digestible way is like, you've got your sympathetic nervous system and your mm-hmm. parasympathetic nervous system. And when you are like being stressed means that your nervous system is in one zone when your environment is really signaling that it should be in another. Mm. And so when you're sitting at your desk and the environment is objectively calm, but your nervous system is in a sympathetic response, it's like in a fight or flight mode in an mm-hmm. environment where it should be in rest and digest. And that has that is basically stress in a nutshell. And when you spend too much time in the wrong, nervous system response for what your environment is asking for, then you accumulate stress, and that has all sorts of health effects.
Mm-hmm. Maybe binging horror movies isn't the best idea.
Yeah.
I don't actually do that because it is really stressful. My husband gets really sad because he loves them.
I do. Yeah, I do. And now I'm realizing why I'm always so scared.
And it has really obvious immediate impacts, such as like, you know, if you exercise really hard, you mm-hmm. basically like your body stays in a fight or flight response for a period after. And it's hard to digest food after that, because your body's just like not in the mode of digesting
food.
So that's like like an acute example. Yeah. But then like over time, you know, mental health ramifications, mm-hmm. a lot of like with your chronic pain syndrome, and I'm assuming your body finds itself in a nervous system response that isn't necessarily indicative of the environment. How does that, how do you sense or feel about stress or that nervous system response, you know, being dominant in your life?
It's kind of a weird thing. I'm trying to remember what episode I just listened to. You had somebody else talking about where it sounds terrible, but you kind of just learn to cope. Like it's the normal now for my body to just be in a state of stress. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I've had tons of health stuff that's just weird for my whole life. And so my body's always kind of had a hard time dealing with things. And then when we hit this, it's just like, it is what it is. Like you start out being like, I can't live like this. And then, you know, 8+ years later, you're like, well, this is normal. And so you just kind of somehow shift. It's kind of like when they talk about the grief process, right? Like mm-hmm. if you lose someone, it's like somebody told my mom passed away earlier this year. And somebody gave me the analogy of like grief is like butter, and you're making croissants. Ooh. It's this big brick to start with. And over time you build it into that pastry dough. It's still the same amount of butter. It's still there. It just becomes something else.
Oh, dude. I love that.
I love that too.
That is a great analogy.
Isn't it?
it makes grief a little tastier than it should be. But that is actually fucking genius.
It also makes sense for someone from Utah to use a butter reference.
She just finished really churning, accurate. Dude. Give her a fucking break. No wonder her back hurts.
All the time.
Brian hasn't been to Utah or Pennsylvania.
Nope.
Oh my goodness. But that is a really beautiful analogy. I've never heard it before. And I mean, I think that's something that will stick with me forever. I really love that. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah.
You're welcome. It really meant, like, it really hit me too. And it just kind of, it fit not just with like the loss of my mom, but how I've dealt with this diagnosis and having to, it is what it is. It just becomes part of you. It's still there. It's always there, but you learn to cope with it. Mm. And that's kind of how I feel about even in my nervous system. Like it's part of who I am now, and I have to learn to live with it. I have to be able to take care of my kid. I have to be able to work full time. I have to still continue living. And I mean, you do all the things, like you go to therapy and learn all the mindfulness and whatever you can to help, but you just have to learn to integrate it into your life.
Yeah. What would you say is the biggest thing that Kerps has taken away from you?
Probably my ability to live the life I thought I was going to live, right? Be the mom I thought I was going to be the spouse I thought I was going to be more active. When I was younger, I was a dancer, and having a lot of like those active lifestyles and career minded things, and have to really slow down. I would say it just really changed where I thought the direction of my life was going.
Mm. What would you say is the biggest thing that it's given you?
Empathy. People will tell me something's going on in their life, whether it's pain or whatever. And it's just like, when you've hit your lowest lows because you can't get out of bed because you're hurting, or because you're hurting affected your mental health so much, you can really learn to connect with other people and feel for them on a level that you didn't before.
Well, Libby, this has been just so much fun. It's been such a lovely conversation.
Thank you.
We're eternally grateful, not only for you having the courage to submit your application to come on the show and share experience, but also, you know, very grateful for the fact that you are you're a listener, and that you've been listening for so long and supporting what it is that we're trying to do. And so it feels so nice to have you not only supporting, you know, in the background by tuning in every week, but also by contributing to this catalog and being a part of this show forever now. So thank you so much. This has been an absolute delight.
Thank you. I'm so glad I got to come on. It's been a blast, but more than that, thank you for making the show. It gives people like me a reason to laugh at ourselves and to know that there's a community out there of like-minded people who are dealing with all this stuff.
I know that your schedule is very tight, and this is like the middle of the workday on the farm, and that butter ain't going to churn itself. So we will let you go. But thank you so much, Libby, and really looking forward to just following along. Oh, you're a graphic designer. How can people find the work that you do? Because it's very cute. You have like I don't mean that in like a fucking. I know some people don't like that.
I work at a company that does very cutesy things, so that's kind of like my niche.
It's very sweet. How can people find your work?
My Instagram is Libby Slem Designs, and I post some of the stuff I do for work, but lately I've just been like illustrating stuff that my kid says. So
that's awesome.
Makes it kind of cutesy.
Surprise. You're allowed to use technology.
You got to break free somewhere.
The link to Libby's Instagram will be in the show notes. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you guys.
All right, well, there we go. That was a very fun conversation with a Luddite Mormon. So glad that somehow we've infiltrated the Mormon community down in Utah. So thanks for that, Libby.
And force them to use technology.
Did you hear what's happening with the Mormons in podcasts?
No.
They've subcontracted a non-Luddite to stand on a soapbox and listen with AirPods in, and they like basically preach the podcast out to the community.
Oh, nice. Cool. Spread the good word.
That makes a lot of sense.
I thought you were going to say like a really good joke that you wrote and was moderately disappointed.
It wasn't that.
I'm flattered that you think I've written really great jokes.
Yeah. So we got to bang this out pretty quickly, because as we're recording this, the moon is going to be passing in front of the sun, blocking it completely from our view. Which I don't know if you guys heard, but there was a state of emergency in Niagara. I'm pretty sure they think that, like, they're suspecting that when that happens, everybody within the Niagara region are just going to die.
They're going to all jump off the falls
or something. I don't know. They did state a state of emergency. So I think that it's got to be bad.
But I think that it's that they think that, so, you know, like when it's nighttime, it gradually becomes nighttime. But during a total solar eclipse,
yeah,
it basically becomes nighttime.
Everyone's just going to fall asleep at the wheel.
Well, I don't think it's a matter of seconds, but it's quicker than nighttime.
Yeah, it's like an hour and a half, two hours.
Like, it's like,
which is actually might be slower than nighttime.
Right.
No, I don't think so. Yeah, because
2 hours?
No, because
it doesn't become night in 2 hours. It's quicker than that.
Well, no, it doesn't become it that fast. It becomes it in like 3 or 4 hours. And here's the thing is that your eyes don't have an opportunity to adjust. So if you're driving and your pupils don't dilate fast enough over the course of 2 hours, then you might not be able to see and could drive.
You know
over
what I'm hearing
falls.
From you? You know what I'm hearing from you? I'm hearing big content. Big content, trying to just capitalize on content.
If you want to, I mean, yeah, to take care of that issue, just wear your eclipse glasses while you're driving.
Right.
They'll take care of that problem real fucking quick.
Yeah.
All right. Let's cover a very fascinating story that came out just recently. And we're going to be talking about twins. So Brian, I know you love your twin content.
Nice.
And we're going to be talking, actually, I've never really asked, I don't know if we've talked about this, but you know, the whole real twin, fake twin thing. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is a conversation about like the realest twins, more real than you and Dennis.
Oh, conjoined twins.
Yeah, that's real. That's pretty real.
That's
conjoined
fair.
Twins definitely take it to another level.
See, to me, they're not even really twins. They're like even more than that.
Right.
You know, like they're
twins evolved.
Yeah. Like, it's not even like conjoined twins. It's just conjoined people.
For a second there, Brian, I thought you were going to say, you said more than, I thought you were going in the other direction, which I was actually shocked about.
Oh, no. But you can see what I'm saying, right? They're not really twins. You know, like
I see what you're saying. I guess it sort of depends on the conjoinedness.
Right. Right. Where are they conjoined? Where do they separate?
Yeah. If it's conjoined by like tips of the finger.
Yeah.
I don't know if that
that's kind of twins.
But like, our hips are joined at the hips, share any organs.
That's
like,
twins, yeah. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
twins.
But if they separate at like the shoulders.
And like they've got one body.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, guys, Brittany and Abigail Hensel are one of those twins.
Oh, I heard about this story.
Yeah. So they are female conjoined twins. They are conjoined in the upper body. They share all of the same organs kind of below the waist. So they have like one reproductive system. And they made kind of waves when they first gained public attention through television appearances, specifically on Oprah back in 1996. And then they ended up having their own TV series called Abby and Brittany in 2012. I'm guessing that was like a TLC thing.
Like, no, it was more like Mary-Kate and Ashley. It was like just a regular reality show.
Donovan, can you cut that out? Whatever the fuck just came out of his mouth. What the fuck are you talking about?
It was just a regular show. Like you're like, I think that it's problematic that you assume that it was on TLC. Like it was just a regular show.
TLC back in the early 2000s was
exploitative.
Was kind That's of right. a regular kind of, television right. series. I mean, TLC was pretty regular for a bit. It
TLC
was like A&E.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then it went downhill.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
When That's they
right.
actually said that it was called the Learning Channel, it was kind of
it was the Learning Channel for a while.
Yeah.
And then it just became TLC.
And then it was the exploitative.
Then it became like Kate and John.
It was the exploitation channel at one point. Yeah.
Anyway, so they've recently garnered a whole bunch of new attention. The spotlight returned to them when it was reported that Abigail, one of the two, had a wedding ceremony in 2021. They acknowledged this event through what appears to be wedding photos shared on their TikTok account in 2023. And the response to this has been kind of wild. I mean, I understand people obviously will find it fascinating and will obviously have like questions, but the response has kind of been like a little bit, it's been a bit disappointing in, you know, in
like kind of mean.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And yeah, exactly. So they've not, they haven't directly commented on the discussions around Abigail's wedding, but they did post a TikTok video that seems to reference the widespread attention, emphasizing their constant presence and addressing the detractors. I'm going to play the TikTok here.
This is a message to all the haters out there. If you don't like what I do, but you watch everything I'm doing,
you're still a fan.
Boom! Fucking suck it, right? Yeah. So
that is very true.
They got married. I'll play a little clip of. So if you want to see kind of like the girls, this is video of the two of them, kind of over the years, and you can see here attached. They sort of look like they have one body, but two heads. Like that's exactly how they've been attached.
Wow.
But I think they do have. I don't think they share. I think they have separate lungs. I think they have separate hearts. But where they become one is sort of below the waist.
I saw a thing the other day, and I believe it was in reference to them, and maybe it was a different conjoined sisters, but they looked remarkably similar from what I'm remembering. And it was something like that. They had to pay. They each had to pay for their tuition separately.
University.
But then they were given. But then they got the same job, and they were given one salary.
Yeah. Ooh, okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because they would too. Need. They would need one job.
Well, but they should only need one degree. Not, if that's the case. I mean, it's two brains.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I wouldn't think
how
that they
could
would
you
need
split up the jobs.
Well, I mean, in the age of. Remote work and basically everything beyond. Oh no, right.
Because right, my whole point
right,
is
they've
like,
got one set of hands, right?
Yeah, and if they have to be in the same office, it's like okay, well, one's like, well, I gotta go do this thing in the office thing in accounting, and the other one's like, but I gotta fucking sit here on a Zoom call, you know?
Right. So that was the thing. Okay. So
I'm
sure
there's lots of things that they could do.
Yeah. I mean, with the one sets of hands thing is tough because if you had two sets of hands,
so there's people who use computers without. Using their hands, you know, like,
yeah,
like, you have like speech to text
yeah.
or
right.
something.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure there's ways around it, but like, but let's just ignore that. I think you're right. But if you've got one, if you're only giving one job, one salary, but you've got two debts, two student loan debts to cover.
Well, it's crazy made them pay two separate university degrees.
They've got
because
two.
Also like the point is like, well, could you go to two different classes at the same time if you wanted to study two different things?
Right.
Yeah, yeah. You're forced to study the same thing, right?
Unless
right.
you're, so yeah, unless you're doing all virtual and like, you know, AirPods.
I don't
or
know.
Something.
It's bullshit anyway that they're not more considerate to the people in that situation. Like, you just should never end up like if you had to pay for two university degrees, you should both be able to get separate jobs from that.
So
if you pay for one, then. You know, maybe that's one settler. I don't know.
So this gentleman is the man that married Abigail. This is a photo from their wedding. Obviously, you can imagine the sort of like public discourse that is a bit disappointing. It's
this is my twin sister. Her name fuck me.
It's kind of like in that vein, you know, like just a little bit inappropriate. Which
early 2000s humor.
So
everybody knows how problematic early 2000s humor is.
Yeah, the intense public and media attention highlights a broader issue of privacy violation and exploitation, especially concerning individuals with unique physical conditions.
I mean, it's a fascinating circumstance.
Yeah,
no doubt. Do we need to be mean about it?
No,
no.
Yeah, I think like there's so fascination is inherent. Especially in this kind of situation, because it's so different.
No doubt.
But there is like a sort of problematic nature of fascination that surrounds this issue, which obviously pertains to like, okay, well, you know, you're married to Abigail, but you're not married to Brittany. And so like when you guys consummate your marriage or when you guys are banging, it's like, what do you, like, you know, who, like, how do you do that? Like,
that's
what do you know?
Definitely the first thing that's coming to mind.
And it's like, well, who fucking cares? And also like, why do you like, you know, mind your own business. Why does it matter?
I like the saying
mind your own business in the public domain.
Well, I like the,
it's definitely interesting to think about though.
The saying that,
but think about it inside.
Yes. Totally.
With inside voices.
Yes.
And by inside voices, I mean, think about it in your own head.
Yeah.
And don't go on TikTok or Twitter or whatever.
Yes, 100%.
Keep your mouth shut.
There's a great like therapy or self-help Instagram that I follow where I saw a quote the other day that was like, it's okay to feel things. You can't control what you feel when you feel it in the moment. What you can control is the behavior. So if you like feel curious about that situation, you feel this like these like feelings of questions, that's okay. You can feel that way. But then when you actually go and write fucking mean shit on the internet, that's not okay. You can control that.
Are you just checking out the eclipse?
Wow. Yeah. That was fucking impressive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
Are you staring right at it?
That was, uh-oh.
Can you see anymore? I thought you had glasses on, dude.
I don't think these were rated.
Oh, fuck.
So the other thing, too, that this kind of touches on is there's like a historical context to the fascination that we as society have had with conjoined twins. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, we have a fascination about it because we've talked about conjoined twins on the show tons and tons of times. But like throughout history, conjoined twins have often been the subject of public curiosity to like almost to their own detriment, which can be traced back to like the era of like freak shows, you know, in like the early 19th or early 20th century, where they would take, you know, like there would be a traveling show and they would have mm-hmm. like conjoined twins, like, you know, put on a stage or in a cage and come and kind of like mock and point. And it's, this is like the 21st century version.
Yeah.
It's
just on TikTok now. You don't have to travel.
Yeah. So it is fascinating. The thing that I'm kind of curious, like the thing that I am curious about, and maybe, I don't know, maybe this falls under that sort of inappropriate fascination, but it's like, I'm curious about the birth side of things. And in particular,
wow, look at that.
Oh man. Holy shit. That's cool.
I can only see a big circle now, a big ring in my vision, but, other than that, it's
fine. The thing I'm curious about is like, if they have kids, when Kiru actually was the one who told me about the story. And the first thing that I thought about was, like family law. So, you know, in some states, in some provinces, there's like you could live somewhere in Canada where it's illegal to have a polyamorous family.
A polygamous family.
Married. Polyamorous family. Polyamorous. Where really? There's children involved, where they can't legally say you have two moms and one dad, or you have two dads and one mom, or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So maybe no one's married, but they have the kids are involved. And so it's like, well, only two of you can be mom and dad.
Whereas legally recognized.
I believe in British Columbia, you can't, they actually do legally recognize. So like, you know, and this was recent where it might be, BC might be the only place right now. But so if they had a kid, right, the baby is coming from the two of them from the same uterus. I don't know. It was that kind of thing where I just thought like, man, what is it? Like, what are the sort of legal implications with like a family, you know, having a family? But again, I don't know. Maybe I should just mind my own business, but it is something.
There's a lot of fascinating questions that come up from it.
I have a question. If one of them commits a crime, and the other one doesn't.
I think it's whoever, because they each have their own arm. So whoever pulled the trigger is at fault. But then, you know, if you're going to do life in jail, who's, you know, I guess you're just dragging your sister down with you. I don't know.
These are all fascinating questions.
They should get two salaries.
Right.
Oh, sorry, right. I got a call coming through here.
From the Sun?
It's saying stop looking right at me. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed this conversation. We loved Libby. Libby, you're such a so fun to be able to chat. And if you want to support the podcast, please head on over to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever, wherever you're listening, and hit the like button, hit the follow button, go on over to YouTube, subscribe, knock the notification bell, leave a comment below, get real confrontational in the comments. And come on over to Discord. We've got a lovely Discord community. We'd love to have you there. And there's episode discussions and people contributing to these wrap-up segments. So we'd love to see you there.
Yeah. And thank you to Libby also for coming at us from the North American home of polyamory, Utah. if you want to be a guest on the show, go on over to sickboypodcast.com and fill out the guest form.
And if you work for a health association and you think, you know, podcasting is pretty cool, it'd be cool if there is a podcast for my association, reach out to us. We would love to help you make that happen. You can check out more at wearesnack.io. Thanks, as always, to the folks who helped make this show happen. A huge thank you to Jeff Lonis, Richard Coyne, Donovan, the CPAP Morgan. We love you guys.
That is it for this week.
I'm Brian.
I'm Taylor.
And I'm Jeremy. And this is Sick Boy.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.